Great what? Song. Absolutely like great. It? But it's not the song for today, Zach.
Why not?
What can it be for today?
Because there's another song for today.
What's the song for today, Eric?
Whoa, Blackwater, keep on rolling, Mississippi Moon, won't you keep on shining on? Oh, Blackwater, keep on rolling. No?
Yeah.
Mississippi no, Moon, when you say Blackwater,
it just makes me think of the black, nasty water I just climbed out of in my car because my exhaust pipe was still in the water when I was pulling out.
Yeah, you had an interesting experience, didn't you, tonight?
I'm still having it. You know, we were just talking before the show. And I was like, hey, guys, I probably got to keep this one to around a half hour because I have to go get a tractor or something in the middle of the night to go hopefully get my car out of this ditch.
Yeah, you have quite a bit of snow by you.
Yeah.
I don't know, Eric, do you have any snow out in Chicago?
Yes. Yes, we do have just a couple inches that fell in an hour. Nothing of note. But I got buried. I actually had to bring out the good old ice pick / snow scraper.
Oh, no.
From the storage unit in the basement. I'm so glad it made the move with me because I wasn't quite certain if it was down there. That was the last place I could have looked, but of course it was there. And so when I go to work tomorrow, I'll be able to go to work tomorrow.
Let's just think about how nice it was to have the both of you guys here, because I know it was just Eric and I Friday. And actually the snow is to blame for our Friday episode being a day late because my power was out in
how
this
weird
place.
Is that? Yeah.
So weird that snow would cause the wait and the lines to things happen. That's why we do podcasts and we don't repair electrical poles, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
You know, people.
Yeah.
I just watched 2001 for the very first time. Talk about back in time. But also the black monoliths in that film, not to spoil too much, but they find one that's like 4 million years old.
Don't tell me.
Okay. But essentially, they have a power source that lasts at least 4 million years. Let's just say that. And so it's so funny to think a little bit of inclement weather can knock out the systems we've got.
You see how that works, ladies and gentlemen, listening to Game of Thrones, a podcast in your ear holes, even with things that aren't involved with the show that we're doing right now, because as you know, Eric and I remain unsullied.
Mm-hmm.
We still have spoiler alerts to each other where it's like, you're talking about something completely unrelated. Don't tell me you might have something to do with it. So just leave it.
Have you never seen 2001?
Not yet.
Are you getting paid by the director of the film to
I wish.
Shamelessly plug
That'd
it?
Be very
I
nice,
wish
actually.
I were like 1 degree of separation.
Stanley
Kubrick
is paying us personally to produce this show, guys. That's the deal.
That would be definitely.
You've all wondered why we work really hard. That's why.
Well, many people don't know Kubrick's middle name, which once you know his middle name, you can actually rearrange the letters of his
He's
full
my dad.
Name.
Just
and
tell
get
everybody.
George R. Martin.
I was just thinking about the reason why we do all this work really hard and blah, blah, blah. And it made me think of that iTunes review that you talked about before we recorded the show just now, Micah, that we were going to open with, that we decided not
we
to
decided,
open with.
Because people decided to sing, which is good, though. It's the time of year.
I never know what to do. After we do the clap and we start, what do we do from there? Like,
it's just welcome. Whatever happens. That's really, you know, you just leave it up to chance. And
yeah.
this show decidedly opened with a song.
Yeah.
And Eric probably was
happy
listening to it at Howl at the Moon at
yes.
some point over the weekend.
Yeah, they love the Doobies there.
they do. They love Doobies.
The Doobie Brothers, of course.
But it was when you said something about being unsullied, and you've said it a couple times on the show.
A few
it
times.
It sounds so pure. It makes me feel like I'm dirty or something.
You are. You're dirtier than I am. Like, I feel like I've been strapped down a few times, but not for the same reasons maybe you've been strapped
Micah's
down.
Micah's got the secret dirty. Micah's got the dirty that you just wouldn't, like, walking by him in a crowd, you wouldn't assume that he was dirty, but he's totally sullied with Game of Thrones.
You're so
secrets.
Sullied, Micah. You're so sullied.
You,
oh,
who
man.
Would guess that that man knows the next 10 people who die in the series by George R. R. Martin? Seriously.
Everyone listening that is sullied, you're so sullied.
Yes.
You're all so sullied.
Yes.
But I'm not as sullied as Brian Cogman.
No, Brian is more sullied than the both of us.
He's a dirty bastard.
We're going to get Brian Cogman on. He's going to tell us about Ryan, the dirty, even more sullied man locked in his closet.
I heard it was Ryan who was the dirty one, but.
All right.
Well, he doesn't shower. Should we talk about anything that has
let's
to do with what
the,
we have
let's
to
talk
do?
About
let's
the,
get to this
let's
review.
Talk about this review.
Okay.
It may be the nearest semblance of anything that's close to being
It's Monday. We're happy. It's bright and shiny because the sunlight's reflecting off of the snow, and that's just how it works. And my friend Micah has been waiting patiently as we've jabbered our jaws for a while here. We'll get to Sansa. She has a chapter. Lots of exciting things are happening.
It's true.
But right now, Micah is going to say words in your ears.
Yeah, that's right. So we got a nice review here from our friend Casey the Catastrophe.
All right.
Who rated us 5 stars
play
on iTunes.
Play to your strength.
Thank you, Casey.
And left us a message with the title, Very Solid.
Thank you, Casey.
Casey says, adequate. I've listened to other Game of Thrones podcasts, but none have been insightful yet, as lighthearted as this one. I think what Casey was trying to say is, but none have been as insightful or lighthearted as this one. Now I'm just making up.
Well, no, it's still grammatically correct to say.
It's grammatically correct.
None have been insightful yet as lighthearted.
As lighthearted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And he even hyphenated lighthearted. It's not a dash, people.
So it is not a dash.
Thank you.
It's right, not well, Puma.
LaDasha, you're
trying
listening.
Not correct Casey anymore and just read the rest of the review. I don't really like people in general.
Ooh.
Oh. Comma. Okay. But, still grammatically correct.
But I like each member of the panel. That says a lot.
Hey, say that better. He has an exclamation point, all right? Casey took time to read that. Say it excitedly, at least the part after the last comma.
I don't really like people in general, but I like each member of the panel. That says a lot.
Okay, that was better.
Is that better?
Much yeah, better. We'll take your word for it, Casey.
Much better. Thanks,
the
Casey.
The thing I respect the most about the podcast and the listener community is the fact that there is nary a spoiler to be found.
I agree.
Keep up the good work.
Oh, okay.
We try. We do try. That actually ties into what we were talking about earlier with the Sullied stuff. We planned that, kind of.
Yes, that was all thought through based off of this review that we were supposed to read at the top of the show, and then we just waited.
Yep. And made up other stuff. It's all been planned. Listen, it's December. It's cold. Eric and I were just talking on the weekend episode. We were talking about how excited we are to be near this part in the book, how it's sort of cascading toward the end, and also the year is cascading toward its end, and how it's cool that, I don't know, I feel like the last year, the months leading up to the new season, they went by so fast. So we've got some really cool stuff planned programming-wise for our show after we're finished with this book. I know some of you guys have been wondering, and we're excited to get going on all this, but we're not quite there yet. We're still dealing with Sansa, and she's still dealing with the little red flower.
Yeah, and these are the these are, and Cersei had to check. There's this very strange relationship between the Queen Regent and the uterus of the lead Stark girl. You know, you look a little pale. Are you still bleeding? She's like, yeah. It's like, oh, great. Well, the men outside are bleeding and you're bleeding in here.
So if you haven't gathered by Eric's hysterical laughter, this is the part in the TV show that you've all seen, I'm sure, and a lot of you have read, where they're beginning the battle and Sansa is being tucked away in Maegar's Holdfast.
You know, I wanted to say we do appreciate you sticking with us so far in these winter months. It's a busy time of year. You know, we had Black Friday, people rushing around. And Christmas is coming and lots of time for family, but we appreciate you putting us in your ear holes multiple times a week. You know, giving us a play and a listen. And, to everybody who wrote in and reviews and all that, like Casey, if you gave us a sword to kiss before you headed into battle, we would kiss it for you.
Do you find that to be phallic at all?
No, definitely not, because it's much sharper and much more metal than a cock.
What about Data? He's fully functional, and I'm pretty sure his android body is all metal.
You would have to ask
Gene Roddenberry.
No. Shit, why can't I? Why are you? I gotta look. Who's the security lady who gets?
I know you're talking about. God, don't tell people what happened to her.
No. It's this isn't supposed to go in because I'm supposed to know her name automatically. Hang on.
We're just gonna leave it now while you write.
I hope you can all hear her typing. La la la.
It's the part. It's the episode where everyone gets drunk. I think it's the second episode after
Denise Crosby. Who'd she? Yeah, it was the naked now. Wait. Tasha Yar.
Yep.
So this is to be cut in immediately. That well, you'd have to ask Tasha. Ask Tasha Yar.
Ask Tasha.
Tasha Yar, Micah, because she's the only woman that I know in the whole run of the show. Whoever experiences.
What Data's. Show are you talking about?
TNG, Next Generation. Man. Yeah.
Do I think it's phallic though? I mean, I feel like people can construe it into that sense, like, oh, it's a sword and it stabs into stuff. That could be kind of like she's kissing my sword, so this is like an emasculating like sort of thing. But I think that's kind of a stretch in this situation. I think it's just Joffrey being a kid.
There's that line too, and I'm paraphrasing here, but she basically said she'd rather kiss 1,000 other swords than kiss Joffrey's sword.
No, that has nothing to do. Well, I guess, okay, look, it's similar, but this is a practice. You see, it's a luck charm, if you will. It's, you know, that is the sword that he will be striking men down with. And so to bless it for, you know, good luck or something like that, it's not sexual. Not any more than killing someone with a sword is sexual. It is what it is. It's blessing the sword that he goes into battle with. However, you know, there is some debate in this chapter about how much battle Joffrey will actually be seeing, kind of the men that are surrounding him. And he just basically, Sansa has a lot more hope for Tyrion, to be kicking some ass than she does for Joffrey.
I'm going to set up this chapter. This is what was said at the very beginning, just so you all listening can get a good sense of what we just read. It goes as, they had been singing in the sept all morning, since the first report of enemy sails had reached the castle. The sound of their voices mingled with the whicker of horses, the clank of steel, and the groaning hinges of the great bronze gates to make a strange and fearful music. In the sept they sing for the mother's mercy, but on the walls it's the warrior they pray to, and all in silence. She remembered how Septa Mordain used to tell them that the warrior and the mother were only two faces of the same great god, but if there is only one, whose prayers will be heard? So lots of things are happening. And I read this, guys, and I think of myself, when George was writing this, and he said something about the groaning hinges of the great bronze gates, mm-hmm. Do you think he had the gates in mind, or just in general he was like, oh, some gates can be heard in the distance? Like, do you think that he associated it with an actual thing?
My question is it sexual for the gates to groan?
Oh, that's funny. Ha ha ha.
Well,
see, I make a serious point earlier.
No, it's not safe.
There's actual reference. Anyway.
I think to answer your question, though, George has a pretty damn good idea of what gates those may be.
Yeah, I agree. And if someone were to be like, hey, which gates? He'd be like, this one.
Then yeah,
he'd be like,
yeah,
oh,
exactly.
I'm stumped now.
He just has that detail. And you see it in the next chapter, especially when landmarks are being mentioned as they pass them in the boat. But in this chapter, as Sansa is leaving the sept, you know, a couple minutes into the chapter, a couple pages in, you know, fighting actually breaks out for the first time. That's actually like confirmed to be, you know, the Stannis versus King's Landing sort of fight involved. So and that's kind of terrifying, because I'm thinking, great, she doesn't do well in crowds when there's fighting. Like, she doesn't have a good history of surviving it, so she better get behind those, you know, back into the sept, back into Maegor's or Maelor's holdfast.
My lords.
Well, they really just, you know, fighting broke out as she was walking, and I was like, great, this is... Where's the hound when you need him?
I really like this chapter, though. I think that they did it really well in the show, because, I mean, right after that first paragraph, and she's seeing Joffrey's armor. She's seeing how rich and grossly decorated it is, you know, just so majestic and bright and shiny. But I love that we got a little mention of Tyrion and how he kind of looked like a little boy dressed up in his father's clothes up on his horse.
but
his
it wasn't,
axe.
What did she say, though? She said it wasn't childish, like... He looked like a child, but it was really like this, like, total solid, you know, look to Tyrion, like he was really going to go roll some heads. The interesting thing about Tyrion, maybe I'm reading into it because I've got the third season ahead of me. We know that Tyrion legitimately cares for the well-being of Sansa. You know, I guess at this point it's just because she's a Stark girl. And because he knows that his cousin or what his nephew is mistreating her. But he says to her, we'll talk after the battle if the gods are good. And it's this throwaway line right as she's walking away. They have a few lines before that. But just that he said, you know, we'll talk later after he asks her how she's going and he's got to ride into battle is kind of like you have something to look forward to. Because Joffrey sees that she's there and calls her away like a dog. And Tyrion's just like, hey, okay, my nephew has need of you, but we'll chat later. You know, we'll talk about it if the gods are good. It gives, like, you see what I'm saying? It's like a weird kind of friendly gesture to say, I'll catch up with you. You know, I'll make it my business to know your business in the future. I'll check in.
Yeah. It's an interesting dynamic that the two of them have with each other, because even later on in the chapter when she's praying, she actually prays for Tyrion.
Yeah.
And that's something that you probably wouldn't expect.
I agree. But she also prays for all of the knights who are fighting in the battle, all of their mothers and wives and sisters who are going to lose. You know, there's a few other people that she prays for in that thing. But of course, the one she doesn't pray for, and how about this for Sansa? When the High Septon is talking about the king and about how the gods have to be good and grant strength and unity in battle for the king, Sansa stands up, stops praying. She won't pray. She can't bring herself to do it. She wants to. She can't. She doesn't really want to.
She starts stands to walk
up,
out.
Stands up and walks
Yeah.
out. Does not pray for the king.
I don't think you're projecting, though, man. I think that in this chapter, we were meant to kind of get a sense that she is becoming more friendly to Tyrion. Like, she's understanding that he's a much better person. Because I think when, you know, when Joffrey was yelling at her, he was like, you better go on and go ahead. Mm-hmm. Because I think in that moment, she sees that, you know, he's not this bad person. He's literally just a person stuck in the mix like she is, but he's in a better situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the joke is even made by Tyrion early in the chapter about who Sansa is actually praying for.
Yeah.
And she says she notices a queer little smirk on his face when he asks her about it. And Tyrion is just realistic. That's the one of the best things about him. And he knows the situation that she's in. He understands it. And he has a bit of an ally in her, one of few really in King's Landing. And I think they get along very well with each other because I don't think they're in that different situations. You know, clearly, you know, he's in a little bit of a better situation than she is, but I think a lot can be compared between the two of them.
There's something to that. And then what I wanted to say was that I wanted to say that Sansa just gets a bad rap because she's like this singing bird or whatever. And she just does what she's told and all that stuff. Whereas like Tyrion, people think that he's this crazy person. The more time you spend with Tyrion, even if you're Sansa and his whole family's holding you captive, the more time you spend with him, same if you're Kat, you know, and you're keeping him captive in the Mountains of the Moon, the more time you spend with this guy, the more you just fall in love. You like the guy. You realize he's not bad. You know, all the things that you're saying, Micah, that he's just caught up in things. With Sansa, though, it does take – there is more development. Like, she's turning into a person who is more capable of dealing with this kind of threat, you know, from her. She's still working out how to behave in front of the king. And actually, she does, again, hold her tongue a couple times when she's with Joffrey about to kiss his sword, or right after she kisses his sword. There's a few things she wanted to say that she didn't. And I thought it was smart because he could have struck her down and that would have been the end of it.
She did go ahead and say like, oh, but my brother, he rides right out in the battle, but he's a full grown man. So, I mean, I totally understand if you don't. Pretty much just like the TV show did.
Because you're a little boy.
Yeah. And I just like, great job. I know that just like you said, it took her time to grow into more of a badass and heavily likable character. But I really think in this chapter, with that situation and also with what happens later when she meets up with Cersei, I think that Sansa really handled herself truly like a Stark would, and she's becoming more and more of a sort of mature, adult-minded character in the story.
Yeah, I think it's strange to think of there being like seeds planted for Tyrion and her relationship.
It is, though.
It totally is. I mean, it's a Sansa chapter. I'm glad it's not a Tyrion chapter that this is. It's either or, but it's just like, hey, Sansa's growing and changing. It's nice that we just have this regular rotation of characters that we keep in, that we keep checking in with, I guess. I mean, I wonder how many chapters are centric to a character, whereas another character is actually more prominent. You know, for this, it's still Sansa, but there's a lot of Tyrion in it at the middle. So it's just kind of like, we got more of Tyrion now, but from somebody else's perspective. So it's kind of cool.
We even got a mention of Lady Tonda and her daughters, and that was another situation where Sansa could show off her personality. I guess George could write and show that she is compassionate and she understands. I think that Lawless, we can kind of gather, is the one that was raped.
Right.
And she is not reacting well to the fighting outside. You know, when she was leaving the Septs and heading back and going into Maegar's Holdfast, Sansa could hear the giant sort of crossbows with the yard long shafts and the big spears getting shot into battle. And she could hear catapults going off. And when she sees Lady Tawn and her daughters, she understands immediately, I assume, that this girl is reacting so poorly to the fervor because something terrible happened when another situation with lots of fervor happened.
Yeah, that's good analysis. And Sansa, you know, goes up to her and says, well, there'll be food, you know, and songs, and there'll be food and songs, and you can come do this. But it doesn't really sway her, except she's able to get assistance. Like, she's able to, she does make a difference when she arrives there. And it's actually afterwards, she says, the rumors are that this daughter is pregnant, actually, recently.
And we got a brief mention of Shay, so we know that.
I know, yeah.
She helps carry her. Well. Yeah.
Yeah. This was just to me, I thought it was a great setup chapter for what's to come in the next several chapters with Blackwater. And I know, kind of in anticipation of recording this week, Eric just so pointed out that he read two chapters, and I said, two chapters? Why the hell did you do that? You know, I mean, I think you get to the point where, first of all, you see Davos's name, and you just can't help
yourself. That was it. I put down the Sansa, and I was like,
well, because you're reading, Micah, and all of these things are happening, and then you get to the last page, and the next chapter is Davos, and you're like, that bastard's on one of those boats outside.
Yeah, because where else would he be? He wouldn't be like, oh, I'm a Dragonstone, they left me home, you know?
It's really so nicely done. I was thinking about other novels that are written in sort of this same time period setting with the way it's all feudal and the weapons and blah, blah, blah. And I really like how this is handled because it feels so modern. And the multiple characters, just like you were saying, Eric, it's so refreshing. And I feel like when we're talking to the queen, it doesn't feel like we're talking to the queen, you know, because we're in Sansa's perspective and she's sitting on the left of the queen. You know, she's sitting in her side chair when they go and meet up with all the other gals that are locked in the room together, because we have sort of an inside look of someone who is betrothed to the actual king. So I really like it. It's not from the perspective of someone like a lonely knight that's fighting for the king and he's outside fighting right now. We get to have that with Davos, but we also get to have this perspective from Sansa. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. It's set up very well. And you mentioned Cersei, and she has this banter back and forth with Sansa, and she just casually throws out there, you know, aren't you familiar with what happens when the city gets sacked? Oh no, you must not be. I mean, come on. The girl is all of what? 14, 15 years old?
And her city's never been sacked before.
Exactly.
Well,
but that's not a metaphor either.
Theon did kind of take care of Winterfell, though, but she was not around.
Not while she was
there,
though.
Yeah, I mean, while she's never seen it happen. But
and based upon what Theon said, her city would have been sacked in more ways than one if she had been present.
Yeah, what didn't somebody at some point said Theon was into Sansa, or he said, like, it was an interior monologue. Yeah, I'd have done her.
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably wouldn't put it past him. But, you know, the reason that Cersei has to say those things to Sansa, apart from the fact that she's crazy, is because Illyn Payne is in the room with them, and he has brought ice.
I know, ice almost as tall as he is. And I was just so mad when I read that. I was just like, that is Ned's sword, you old, scary-looking asshole.
He's taking it for his own now.
I mean, who wouldn't? I bet it is so nicely made. I bet it's such a damn good sword. And it's like, he's not using it anymore.
It's folded 1,000 times.
Just folded like a good old blanket.
Just 1,000 times.
Quick bit of info we got on Sir Illyn Payne, though, is that he used to be a knight before he was
an executioner.
Official executioner, yeah.
I mean,
the headsman.
You can tell a lot about somebody by their chosen occupation. I guess he just really liked the killing.
Maybe.
The killing aspect of knighthood.
The one thing that I did like, though, about Cersei in this chapter was how real she was when she started talking about all these knights that were, you know, in the room, and how really that once a city starts to come under a little bit of turmoil, you're going to see people's true nature. And then, of course, Sansa spouts out this idea of, well, true knights don't do that. And then she realized herself how stupid that sounded. And I think that's a character moment also for Sansa, when she really is beginning to understand that a lot of what she was brought up on and a lot of the ways that she views the world are almost like in a fantasy land.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cersei even says, Why don't you just eat your broth like a good girl and wait for Simeon, Star Eyes, and Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight to come rescue you, sweetling? I'm sure it won't be very long now. She's in, you know, parts of her, not all of her. She's had a rude awakening, you know, recently. This whole book has been one large rude awakening amid slaps on the face. But there's still those occasional moments where you realize how young she is about, you know, she really feels that she has protection of these knights or these guards. She says to Cersei, won't your guards protect us? And Cersei says, who will protect us from my guards? So, yeah, you're right. When this kind of thing goes down and true natures are revealed, you may find that not everything is as valiant and noble as it should be, or that it looks on paper. And that is just something, I mean, it serves to terrify Sansa. It just is unfortunate, but it is a reality that maybe they're not safe. Maybe they will be glad for Illyn Payne, or maybe he's there to cut her head off.
It just speaks, though, to something that we spoke about before in previous episodes, just the quality of individual that Cersei has elected to the King's Guard, and now this new guard that is responsible for protecting her. These are not honorable individuals in any way. These are not your Barristan Selmys. These are just
sellswords.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dressed in nice looking clothes.
Yeah, I mean, I think Sansa has that moment where she feels the same way. She notices that and says that, oh, these guys are just dressed up sellswords. It's very interesting for Sansa to have that opinion, but I mean, I think it's a good thing that she's noticing this sort of thing now. And perhaps, you know, her role as spectator in this whole battle, we know that she gets through relatively unscathed, serves to actually teach her a thing or two about real tactics about when shit really goes down, how to behave and how to worry and that sort of thing.
Well, I'm going
to
use this talk to transition to my own, if you gentlemen will allow me.
What is it?
Loyal sellswords are rare as virgin whores. If the battle is lost.
I think the latter is impossible.
I don't know. Maybe. I think that's the point of it.
Well, you can sell your body for sex, and if you have no customers, then you're both.
You can't be a professional until you actually do it for money, though. I'm sorry. Oh. You know what I mean? I know that we're in the age of the internet and you can post anything you want in your Twitter bio, but you can't be a professional until you get paid for it. I think the quote makes sense. So Cersei kind of owns Sansa. She does, though. You know, when she gives the whole line about true knights and she's kind of making her feel dumb, like, no doubt you're right. So why don't you go eat your broth like a good girl and wait for Simeon Star Eyes and Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight to come rescue you, sweetling? I'm sure it won't be very long now. I mean, that's an own. She did it. She got Sansa. Sorry, Sansa.
Yeah. What an appropriate name for this episode.
What?
What?
What? What's an appropriate name for this episode? Kiss my blade.
Blade kiss. No.
Kiss what? My sword.
Kiss my sword.
Actually, in my notes, I had wrote down that quote that you guys have read about twice already. So I'm going to have to defer to Tyrion. I'd give my own in this particular chapter if we're staying away from Sansa. Since
you don't
is,
have to.
Thank
okay.
you. Thank, please and thank you. Come again.
You don't have to, Micah.
Who are you thanking, me or Zach?
He's you. Thanking you. Come
thanking
on.
You. Of course I'm thanking
Eric,
you.
Eric literally changed his mind mid-episode. He was like, Dion, oh, nah. I forgot well, about
I,
my own rule.
I worked around it. I worked around
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you did. It was successful.
You could agree. Say, Micah, for instance, that the air that Sansa breathes and the space that she occupies in this chapter owned instead of her.
Our listeners are throwing chips at their iPhones.
I'm pretty sure it would
them.
Work. But seriously, what were you going
to
say?
It's when Sansa says to him, she has, my lord, but King Joffrey sent for me to see him off. I mean to visit the Sept as well, to pray. And Tyrion says, I won't ask for whom. His mouth twisted oddly. If that was a smile, it was the queerest she had ever seen.
Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing about that line is he's like, perhaps if you had told me, I would have to turn you in as some kind of anti-Lannister treat. You know, he's like, I won't ask. But by saying he won't ask, he implies that he knows that it's dirty and he would have to do something about it if she told him.
Nah, I think Tyrion'd be cool with it, honestly. And that's why I think you gave him the own, Micah, honestly. Yeah.
I just like Tyrion. I like his presence and I like just how he interacts with everybody. I mean, we talked about it earlier on in this episode, but not only Sansa. I mean, we've seen him with other characters that we all tend to like. Jon Snow comes to mind, in the last book. And he has a great way of relating to pretty much everybody he interacts with that you know, he finds to be good company. Old Bear is another.
Yeah.
You know, he comments at one point, and I don't remember if it was in this book or the last book, how he just liked him. And I think that says a lot about his character, the way that he's able to get along with so many different types of people.
Yeah, I like it. He's a good guy.
My own is kind of ethereal in this chapter, if that's the right word. I'm not sure if that's the right word for it. But mine actually
it
goes
is now.
Mine goes to
can't take it back.
Mine goes to two. Well, I'll look it up.
Oh boy.
So how are you today, Mike?
I'm good. How are you, Zach?
Good, staying warm as much as I can. Wearing mittens. Okay, you know how like real gloves, like they spread your fingers out and isolate them? Mittens keep your fingers together so they can share the warmth.
That's a great point.
You know, people they don't appreciate it enough. Sorry, Eric, what was your own?
Okay, it was the right word. One welcome definition
back.
Is
welcome back.
Extremely delicate and light in a way that seems too perfect for this world, but an alternate definition is of the celestial sphere / heavenly. My own goes to the mother and the warrior gods who are being prayed to in this chapter. And some people say that, in fact, the mother and the warrior are two separate sides of the same coin, two separate heads of the same deity. The mother, who's the protector, who people pray to see their loved ones through the battle, and the warrior, who's right out there on the field, leading troops into battle. So I thought it was really cool that there's some sort of mythology there where it's like, hey, this was one god who's like accepts full responsibility for the perils of war and the harshness of that, as well as the caring and the loving and the nurturing. I think that's pretty badass. And, you know, I have to tell you guys that we did get an own from Twitter, and it is...
So I guess we're going to read theirs now.
Yeah, it is from one of the quotes that we did mention earlier, but I will not say any more. From Ida Azkoff, they say, "My own for Sansa 5 is by the one and only Cersei Lannister, quote, loyal sellswords are as rare as virgin whores."
True dat. Hashtag it is owned.
It is owned.
I like that, Ida. I like your nomenclature there. It's nice. Yeah. Well, since we're reading Twitter, I'm just going to scroll around and look. We've got no Friday episode anyway for Theon's chapter, own to Reek for playing him like a fiddle. Note how this phrase always crops up. That's true. And yes, I'm sorry about the wait again. Blame me and my power.
Blame the goddamn snow.
Yeah, blame the snow. Don't blame Robin Escobar, though, who tweeted us and said, "Just wanted to let... It's got snow in it. This is perfect. Just wanted to let Goo Crew know, Game of Owns, that winter has arrived." And it's a picture of a snowy... Looks like a soccer field.
Yeah, it does look like a soccer field. Look at that.
Or field hockey, okay?
You know, it kind of looks like the soccer field where I grew up.
Oh, no, Eric.
I mean, I didn't grow up on the field, but, you know, just next to it.
You lived in the field?
See a little tent over there?
One of the goal zones was...
So you see that? There's photographs and things that have been sent to us. Kind words, words of hello, words of their own wisdom that gets translated into word form and then turned into something we can read to you on the show. We love that because it increases the interaction between us and you, and that is literally the only reason we do this. The one reason. The only reason. It is owned. Eric, tell them how to do that.
You can own to us and at us on Twitter, twitter.com/GameOfOwns or at GameOfOwns when you're preparing your tweet, and we will get it right away. You can also email us if you've got sort of a longer own or a life story that you want to tell us. You can do that via email. contact@gameofowns.com. Oh, a little asterisk there. If it's a life story you want to send us, make it short. Nothing less. nothing more than 2,000 words. Thanks.
Nothing more than 5 stars.
Nothing more. If you're into the superlatives, as in worst, slowest, you know, shortest email ever, please remember that we only accept 5 stars over at iTunes. It is the most and the least stars of a rating that we will accept over there. And we have a Facebook, which, you know, we sometimes have a lot of fun on inappropriately and appropriately with some of the Game of Thrones memes. And we post episodes and people chat us about there on there. So scroll on our wall, facebook.com/GameOfOwns.
We should read some of those on Wednesday, I think, or Friday. Some of the stuff that gets scrawled there. So pick up your scrawling because we'll read those. It'll be funny.
We will.
And as Eric mentioned, you can head on over to iTunes and leave us a rate and review, just like our good friend Casey did earlier in the show. It is the month of December. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. We also got a review here from Bruja Piruli, who says, I love you guys. I listen to you since the first episode of MuggleCast.
Wow.
You are amazing. There's your review. Well, thank you.
I wasn't like there, but I like direct. It too.
Yeah, oh, you were there, Zach. You were there.
I was
you...
hiding in the shadows.
Yeah, yeah, as a vulture, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. That first episode now over 8 years ago. So thank you for listening for so long. And one final review today, only because they did it in the month of December. It's from AJ Burdick, and they say, Game of Owns is a very nice podcast. Hmm. Very nice, guys.
Wait, is that's it?
No, that was just the title.
So impatient, Eric.
AJ goes on to say, I'm writing to tell you that Goo is a very nice, well-rounded podcast. I feel like this needs to be done in a British accent.
Do it. I dare you.
I feel like
I triple dog dare you to do it.
Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, Micah, triple stamp, ahead, double I didn't stamp. Even think that was a possibility.
Stamp
Mike,
it.
You have
I don't, no, I'm not saying I can do it. I'm just saying.
You have to do this. Unless
Eric,
you're a copy
you just did it. You do it.
I can't see. He's got to copy and paste it.
You can't.
Then take a screen cap, save it in Paint, and then
I'll say it to you, and then you can just say it.
Okay.
No, this is too much work. Write your reviews in British accents so Micah can do it next time, okay, people? Please.
All right. I'm ready to tell you that Goo is a very nice, well-rounded podcast with great insight into the world that George R. R. Martin has created. If you're looking for a boring podcast with nothing to offer, then you have come to the wrong place. This podcast is only for people who want good stuff in their life. Goo is good stuff. Nuff said. Well, thank you, AJ.
That warms our heart, AJ.
I could use that right now. My hands are all sweaty. No, they're very cold, actually.
Yeah, maybe it can melt some ice underneath your car so you can get out of that ditch.
My boots are literally still wet from what I was doing earlier, and I have to go do that now. So if you guys won't mind, I think I have a threat that we can end the show with.
Oh, no.
Threat away.
If you do not, I've never actually done this before, so if you do not rate and review us 5 stars on iTunes and say hello and be nice and be our friends, because we want you all to be our friends, because that's there'd be a lot of friends and everyone needs friends. So we're already your friends, so let's return the favor. I will personally commandeer your vessel. I will drive it over the top of a bridge, and I will not accelerate, thus creating a slippery surface for you to then slide into said ditch that surrounds said bridge, and you shall be there for the next few hours. So don't allow that to happen to you guys, because it could be a very bad thing, because I think officially now, with the photos and the things that's happening in all of our lives, winter has indeed come.
Yes, there is snow on the ground in all three of our backyards. One other thing I would add is we have 197 reviews on iTunes. I think we need to get to 200.
Well, this is the 175th episode of Game of Owns, by the way.
Oh, you see that, people?
I wasn't going to say anything, but now that we're counting numbers.
Indeed.
I am Eric Skull.
I'm Cold Hands.
Yeah, you are.
Cold Hand Luke.
Cold Wait, Hand how do you Louis? Know about that?
Because you've said it 100 times. I don't know what it means, but that's what I am.
And I'm Mike Attenborough.
Cold Hand Luke, Eric. I like that.
Do not Google.
Cold Hand Louie.
Don't Google anything we just said at all.
No.